Hey, it's Phil Hendry here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show website is a site that can be accessed by subscribers to hear over 45,000 hours of our classic radio show, as well as our digicasts and videocasts and, oh, just a host of marvelosity that is there on our website at philhendryshow.com. It's probably the largest, I think, the largest repository of media of one single radio slash audio digital show thing. I don't know what to call it. Yeah, just call it that. Okay. Than any other on the face of the earth. I challenge any other cat that does what I've done and then what I done did do, you know. Yeah, to have the same amount. Never mind. Just never mind. Just do what I tell you to do. Get a subscription. And, of course, I say that with great love and respect. But get a subscription to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a subscription for a month or for a year. It's something that will enhance your life. It's something that's going to make you bigger in every way. You won't get fatter, but I think you will get more muscular. And I think certain parts of your body, well, you better not. You know who got into trouble for that was that Kenny Slagpunk. Right. So just get a subscription to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show. Now, here's the thing. We had a massive equipment failure. Frank,
No, it wasn't. It was Joe. Oh, my God, you're mistaking my husband for General Shaw.
I'm sorry. But yes, I was. General Shaw.
No, I'm not married to General Shaw.
They know that, Margaret. General Shaw took some of our equipment, and in a fit and a peak of anger, threw it out onto the street here. Just out here on Whirly Drive, and then stomped off. And I will be confronting him over that in the days to come. But because of that, we had to replace our board. Our PreSonus digital board was thrown out into the street and run over by a truck. And I don't know, maybe it's something I ought to thank the general for, because it was really wasn't doing the job. But we now have a beautiful Tascam analog board, brand spanking new, thanks to Adam Chavez, our technical director, and all others involved in this marvelous, marvelous thing. But as we break this equipment in, and tonight we will have our chat right here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show BSP chat. That's the BSP chat.
All right, let me write that. BSP.
Yeah, the BSP chat. Oh, well, there you are. How about you?
Yeah, there. Did you hear that? Phil, you went, there you are.
Well, General.
What about it? You asked me to throw it out there.
God damn it.
Yeah.
You weren't supposed to say anything.
I'm sorry. I thought you said, Phil, take this PreSonus. Never mind. Yes, and anyway, so now we have a brand new Tascam board.
Yeah, thanks to the fact that Phil had me throw the other one out into the street.
And a brand new Tascam board. Thank you, Tascam, and all concerned. A brand new analog board. Fantastic. Love it. Can't live without it. Now, on to today's show. From December the 4th last year, Frank Gray hosts another edition of I Remember Hollywood with co-host Margaret Gray. Frank recounts the garbage he produced in and around Hollywood. Right, Margaret?
I don't remember being a part of this at all.
Well, you were, Margaret, because there's your name right there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So let's listen, shall we?
Thanks for checking it out with me, Phil.
What do you mean, checking it out with you? I don't have to check this out with you. You're on these shows. You were on that show. I'm going to ask you.
What are you trying to say? You go, sit down, sit down.
Am I going to ask you, hey, Margaret, do you regret being on this particular show that we're going to replay that you were on?
Yes, something like that.
Well, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Oh, brother.
God, it's great. Come on.
No, it's all right.
Anyway, Frank Gray recounts another edition of I Remember Hollywood with Margaret. He remembers the garbage quote he produced. And in Hollywood is what it says. We'll see what this sounds like. We'll see what this is about. We'll see what we can do. Here it is from December of last year. I Remember Hollywood.
Good evening. I'm Frank Gray, and welcome to Frank Gray's Hollywood. And I'm Frank Gray. Now, a lot of you, let's talk about Ellen Page. She's no longer she. She's now a he. And Margaret,
I've got to explain to people, Frank gets the gender right when the individual's gay or transgender.
You done?
Yeah, I'm done, Frank.
All right, I don't understand.
You've got a gender confusion problem. We've tried to tell you about it, you don't...
So I've got a gender confusion... Okay, I understand that they've told me that I have a gender confusion problem. When he comes in and starts telling me how to do it, hey, those are fighting words. Don't ever tell me how to do it. Otherwise, bad things can happen, and not all of them are are pleasant. Not that anything bad is ever pleasant, but there are times when you have to endure it. You, as the man said, just bite down hard on a towel and take it and ride it, because it'll be done soon.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about being a man. Let's just get on with the show. When I first met Margaret, he was a young actress in the city of Los Angeles. Now, of course, nowadays you call all actors actor. Back then, you would call a female actor an actress, and that has fallen out of favor. I think most of the young actors, female actors that are coming into town, they want to be called actor. They don't want to be called actress. And Margaret, at the time, I don't know.
It didn't matter to me because I was very excited to have the job.
Right. So I don't remember Margaret ever complaining. When I first met him, he was 20. What were you? 20. All right, I won't mention your age.
You know, it's a little bit of a vanity thing, Frank.
Right. But he was in his early 20s, and I took one look at him, and I went, oh, yeah, you know. I'm not going to get too graphic. Don't worry about it.
Please don't.
All right, but I took one look at him, and I went, man, oh, yeah, what I'd love to do to him. But anyway,
if you'll pardon me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get up and...
All right, Margaret, if you have to leave the room, leave the room.
I'm leaving the room so I don't have to listen to the graphic detail.
All right, so he's gone now. But when I first met Margaret, he was, as I say, 21, 22, 26, I don't know how old he was, but he was a young ingenue actor, or as they call him in those days, actress, working on the set of a show called Bunkhouse, which was a show that was written by Parsi Whitcomb. It was executive produced by myself and Dale Hackenauer, and very, very wonderful guys, all of them. And Dale has since passed on, but I know her wife, and we stay in touch. But there was a great cadre of professionals working in Hollywood back then. Dale was one, Jack Tyler, she was another. And all of these professionals, you did it. You wrote the show, and you turned it out, and you gave it to the network, and you said, here, now let me do what I know how to do. And in those days, you'd grab the network, literally, you could grab a network executive by the tie, and you'd pull her forward. And you'd say, I don't care how many children or wives you're paying off. I don't know what kind of alimony you... But if you want to get in the cash fast and you want to sit down in a pile of cash and go, ah...
See, Frank does this because he thinks it's funny.
I don't think anything's funny. I think this is deadly serious.
You're pretending, Frank, as if you're sitting in money, as if it's a toilet.
No, I am not. No, I am... Now, that's where you have me wrong.
Well, this is something you do.
No, this is not... back in the day in Hollywood, in the early 1960s, you could walk into town and someone would say, I've got a pile of cash over here. Do you want to sit down in it and defecate? And you could say, yeah, I think I will. And you could do, and they would thank you for it. They would hire you and ask you to do that once a week. And you could turn in a script. Now, I'm not saying that we turned in garbage. We worked hard. And again, I had a great partner in those days. I mentioned Jack Tyler, and we had Rennie Wiscombe was...
Rennie. God bless him.
Rennie was a classic. Rennie was one of the best. She was married about 19 times to a lot of different, very beautiful, as we called them in those days, dames, very beautiful women. I don't know if Rennie was married 19. I think she was married 19, but she was married to one young, beautiful dancer by the name of Joyce Halderall. And who had bad breath, and we used to call him Joyce Halitosis. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And but this was a brilliant producer, and write, I'll tell you, she could write like you wouldn't believe. And of course, so we turned these script. Now we go to CBS. I go, I got a show that you're going to love called Bunkhouse. And at that time, heading up entertainment at CBS was Newcomb Fraley. Am I right about that?
Newcomb Fraley, but mostly his brother. Carl, I think.
Well, Newcomb and Carl Fraley ran entertainment. They ran entertainment at CBS as if they were the head of a military junta, and all those that worked at CBS were basically the citizens who you could beat up and throw in prison. That is...
But they were successful.
They're wildly successful, and everyone loved them for it. So I went to them, to the Fraleys. I said, well, listen, I got an idea. And I said, well, let's have lunch. So we went over to the commissary. And I remember, I think I had vegetable soup, and I had a buttered bun. As I remember, I wasn't that hungry. But I said to Bogle, I said, look, I got a show called Bunkhouse. Well, they knew it was gold, and they wanted it, and they wanted it bad. And I said, well, I've got a young actress by the name of Margaret Green. And they looked at me like I was out of my mind. I said, well, what are you talking about? We've got Julie London. We've got any number. And I said, I don't want Julie London for this. Big name.
Julie London would have been fantastic, but she was a little old for the part.
Julie London was a little old for the part, but be that as may. Now I hire a director. Well, we hire Margaret, and he's ready on day one. And I was very impressed with that. I said, this is a young actress, and look, he's ready to go. He's raring to go. And I remember paying a visit to you in your dressing room.
No, not exactly, Frank. You knocked on the door, and I said, I'll be out in a minute. You wanted to come in, and I said, that's not going to happen. And I remember you tried to push your way in.
I didn't push. Now, that's not true.
You tried to push your way in the door, and I distinctly said that I would sink a chain. Do you want me to say this?
Well, yeah, because I don't know what it is you're going to say.
I said distinctly, I'm going to sink a chain, a hook, from the tow truck outside. There was a tow truck outside near the trailers with a chain and a hook on the end of it. And I said, I'll sink that hook into your scrotum and I'll tear your genitals off using the crank, the automatic crank, on the tow truck. You don't recall?
I would think I'd remember, sir. You're telling me...
When you tried to push your way into my dressing room...
I remember pushing on the door and saying, Margaret, my name is Frank Gray. I'm an executive producer. It's all right if I see you, if I see it. And I meant nude. I didn't say nude. I want to be respectful.
Oh, that's real respectful, Frank. Yes, you did. You said it's all right because I'm an executive producer, so you can walk around nude in front of me.
That's what I said. Because I was trying to get him to, relax, you know. Young actress, first I just wanted him to relax. I said, listen, it's fine. I'm the executive producer, so you can... strut around inside there, no clothes on. It won't have any effect on me. And so as I tried to push the door open, I felt resistance. And then I heard this voice, and I remember him. He had a beautiful, light, lilting voice. He said, my name is Margaret Green, and as God is my witness, I'll sink the... what was it? You did. You said you'd sink the...
I'll sink the hook on the end of that chain.
Right. He said, I'll sink the hook on the end of that chain into your scrotum, then I'll hit the automatic crank on that tow truck and watch as that chain tears your testicles off. And I was stunned, and I remember backpedaling out onto the blacktop. And at that moment, Wiss Seiler was coming by in a golf cart, and it hit me, and it knocked me to the other side of the pathway, up against the side of the offices there, because I think Mal Paso, Clint Eastwood's company, was there. And
yes, you did. You spun around. He hit you with the golf cart. You spun, went face first into the side of that trailer, that temporary building.
Right. And I lost a tooth, and I was on my hands and knees looking for the tooth when I see two high heels appear, spike heels, two of the greatest legs you've ever seen, and I saw they were attached to this glorious-looking blonde. And his name was Margaret, and when I saw him with those legs, and okay, I'm going to say it, and that beautiful rear end, I said to him, you are working in my show, and I was simply trying to, but if you don't want me anywhere near you, and that's when he said...
I said, stay as far away from me as you can get, or your testicles will decorate the guard gate at Love Studios.
That's it, because we were filming it, and in those days it was called Love Studios. Today, I forget... And it was over here on Lancashire, right near the... maybe today it's Universal, is that right?
I don't know.
But anyway, he said, your testicles will decorate the guard gate here at Love Studios. And even it took a step back and pointed and said, love number one, Frank. Well, I was in love, if you want to get right down to it. I said, I've never seen anything like him. And we began shooting.
We started shooting on that... Monday, and I called home and I told my father, and he said, he sounds interesting. I was telling him about you, Frank. He said, he sounds interesting. Let me know how it goes, because I can be out there very quickly. You know, have gun, will travel.
Well, Margaret's father, I know that she fought with the American forces in Europe in World War II, with the infantry, right?
My father was with the United States Army across Europe, yes.
All right. So I knew she was tough, but she was going to come all the way across the country from Pennsylvania with a revolver that she'd taken off a German officer, the Luger, and was going and said to what did?
Well, he said he would bury the barrel of that thing up your ass, is what he said.
Yeah, she'd bury the barrel of that thing up my ass, and then just start pumping the shots off. So. I had nothing but respect for this family. Margaret was tough. His father was tough. And his mother, your mother, Nadine.
She liked Frank a lot. And I remember saying, what's to like? Because I hadn't really fallen for Frank yet.
Yeah, but I'd fallen for you.
Well, I know that. That goes without saying. But my mother really liked you.
Well, yeah. Margaret's mother liked me because he trusted me and he knew. He knew that he could trust me with his daughter, and that his daughter, Margaret, he would consult with him. You know, mothers and daughters consult, so when he would talk to him and he to him, and of course, the father, your father...
Well, my father was ready to pump a few shots off up your rectum.
Right. His father was ready to just empty a German Luger into my ass, and... it sounds horrifying, but I had nothing but respect for this family because they stood by their daughter through thick and thin, and that's how we came to know Margaret. That's how he and I fell in love, and eventually he became the mother of my son Jason J. We had Jason J. late in life.
Well, we did. We had Jason J. I was in my 40s, Frank, and you were well into your 60s.
Right, and it was quite a I would say quite a time, but Jason J was born, and she, we tried to give her as normal life as we could, a young boy. But she wanted to do all the things a boy wanted to do. She wanted to play baseball. She played football. Still plays some.
Jason J loves the game of football and loves to get in there, and also wants to play ice hockey. But it's a little late now.
Well, Jason J wants to go to an ice hockey school, and I said, what about Colorado? And she said, yeah, Dad, Colorado. And also Wisconsin, and I said, well, whatever you need. So she's going to, and she's about 6'2", big in the arms and chest, takes after my father, who was a carnival weightlifter, and wrestled just anything, would wrestle and would lift trucks up in the air and this kind of thing. My father was a wonderfully kind man, but could only find a way to make a living in carnivals and in sideshows, and just sit there with his pants off in the sideshow, and people would pay money to take a look at it.
Frank's father was abnormally...
Yeah, I don't want to know anything about it, and let's not get into the discussion.
Well, it is interesting, though, isn't it, that...
Yeah, okay, that I don't take after my father, that I don't take after her. She had a large penis, okay, and...
Well, Frank, I'm not saying that you don't, I'm just saying it's interesting...
I'm not a freak, let's put it that way. I'm not a sideshow. Look at my father. I love my father, and she was a wonderful father. She happened to have a large penis, and for a time, I don't know why she didn't go into pornography, you know.
You mean pornography?
Yeah, that's what I said.
I don't know. I think there was a moral... This was all when he was very, very young.
Right, so when my father was young, he ran away to the circus and would lift up trucks. And finally they said, there's really not much you know how to do, but you have that large penis. Let's put you there in a sideshow. And people will pay a quarter to look at it. And
so it goes.
Right. So this is I Remember Hollywood. I'm Frank Gray here with Margaret Gray. And we'll take a time out. Margaret, you wanted to?
Well, I just want to remind everyone to get the backstage pass to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You can get this backstage pass... to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, for a modicum of not a lot of money. And, of course, with that, you have access to the archives of the program. You have access to all the video casts of the program, as well as all the miscellany, the Bobby Dooley podcasts, the Elcott The Next Step, and so on and so forth. A great many wonderful things. Phil is a content monster, wouldn't you say, Frank?
Yeah, I would just say that... I've known a lot of creatives, but Phil Henry is constantly just this stuff that's coming out of... I got to say, the stuff that comes out of her face, would you know... And I say, and Phil, if you're listening, you know I love and respect you, but what comes out of her face might as well just be coming out of her you-know-what for all the good that it does anyone.
Well, that is really insulting, Frank.
No, I mean, it's creative, but it's creative, it's funny, but it's none of it's going to, you're not going to cure cancer with it.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, see? So, listen to Phil Henry, listen to what she has to offer and what she's going to say to you. But at the end of the day, what she does, you can take it all and stick it right back up the, you know, the sort of the universal ass that it came from, for all the good what it do. So anyway, that's the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, the world-famous Phil Henry Show website at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass today.
And welcome back here to Frank Gray's I Remember Hollywood. And I've been talking to my wife, Margaret, because obviously my life in Hollywood started before I met Margaret, but it came to its fruition, I guess you'd say, when I met him and married him and made him my wife. And my son, Jason J. Delmonico. So, you know, I put down the roots here in Hollywood.
Tell everyone, Frank, about the Hershey Squirts and...
Well, that's a side note of mine.
But Frank grew up in Illinois and became a fan of this hockey team in Pennsylvania. So that when we got married and he found out that I was from the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area, it was a little bit of synchronicity.
Well, yeah, see, because I grew up in a place called Lexington, Illinois, and I would listen to radio, and I read the newspaper. I'm a great sports fan, loved Illinois football, loved Big Ten, but I listened to hockey on the radio, and the only games that came in loud and clear in this town, Lexington, because we were in a little culvert there, and the radio signals didn't carry at all. In fact, hardly anything got into where I lived. We got automobiles late. There was a horse and buggy there until well into the 30s, and finally someone showed up with a car one day, and everyone almost fainted, and so then they had a car. So I'm listening to Ray, and I pick up this Hershey Squirts. I became a big fan and listened to all the games. Rob Recknell and the great Lou Bouillabaisse was a great goaltender. And I just love the Hershey Squirts and listened to them religiously over KKAKAKK was the name of the station at 1660 on your or anybody else's dial for that matter. So I got a job when I found my way to Hershey. I hitchhiked, got a job as the mascot, and what it was I dressed up like a brown drip, and the owner of the team was a man by the name of Cash Lemieux, and she would come every day. She'd say, "Where's my little drip of shit?" She'd say, "Where's my little ass drip?" And I'd say, "Here I am, Mr." You know, I'd raise my hand, and she'd say, "Ah, yeah." Say, "Go ahead and spray her down with that brown paint." So my job...
Well, what did you do, Frank? Did you walk out on the ice?
My job was to be in the grandstand, dancing and prancing about, dressed as a brown drip. And
you were supposed to be not the Hershey Squirt candy.
No, not the Hershey Squirt candy. There was no candy called Hershey Squirt.
Well, what's the... Oh, Hershey Kisses.
Those are Hershey Kisses. I keep trying to tell Mark. Hershey Squirt, I came out of hockey's ass. That was the story. It was crude and vulgar, and the team was sold and eventually went... they moved the franchise to Massachusetts, to Brockton or Brockington or... And they renamed the team something dull, like the Tigers or the Lions or something. But for a few couple of seasons in Hershey, they were the Squirts, and I was the mascot. I was dressed as a brown something that dripped out of, as they said, out of hockey's ass comes unexpected things.
I cannot believe that they got away with that.
Well, I'm not saying they got away with it. They tried it. And they didn't get away with it.
Well, were people saying that?
No. But behind the scenes, they'd say, "Out of hockey's ass comes Frank Gray," and I'd go, "Yay!" You know, and they'd throw garbage, you know, waste paper basket stuff at me, and I thought, well, it's a job, you know. And
so you were there dressed as a brown something that dripped out of quote hockey's ass.
Yeah, I was a brown drip. And I would dance and skip throughout the stands. Go Squirts! Go Squirts! And people threw food at me. And this lasted about half of the season till I talked to the general manager of the Squirts, Dick Worthington. And she said, it ain't working. Get lost. You know, just get out. Here's she gave me a couple of bucks and told me to get lost. But and the Squirts never really recovered from having as a mascot a drip of doo-doo, a doo drip or a shit drip or however you want to call it. They used to say, "Here comes the shit drip now, Frank Gray," and they'd go, "Yeah." And I told them all, I said, you go ahead and sit there on that bench because the hell shuttle will be by soon. And I think you're due in hell in about 10 minutes. And they go, "What, huh?" I say, "Yeah, see, this is how dumb hockey play." There's one guy in the Squirts by the name of Cecil Rabinow. And she came from some, pardon my language, Margaret, some northern Quebec shithole.
Well, now you're sounding angry.
I am angry, okay? I'm very angry. This dumb French-Canadian talking about me being a drip out of... And I said, "Rabinow, you hail from the biggest shit pile, the province of Quebec," and I didn't even get the last part of the sentence out. I got hit with a gloved fist, and I was on my back, and I was dog paddling. I didn't know. I was out of my mind. I got hit so hard, I thought I was in an Olympic swim competition. I was, you know, backstroking, and they, you know, started slapping me out of it.
Oh, my God, Frank.
You know, they just, "Hey, come on, Gray, you know, snap out of it." And I said, "Rabinow, you haven't heard the last of this." And
now, how many years ago was that?
Well, that was about 50 years ago. But I'll tell you this much. While Rabinow has not heard the last of it, I haven't seen or talked to Rabinow in those 50 years. For all I know, she's dead.
Frank Gray's I Remember Hollywood will be right back.
Hi, folks. Frank Gray here for I Remember Hollywood. And if you remember Hollywood the way I remember Hollywood, then you don't need my book, I Remember Hollywood. If you don't remember Hollywood the way I remember Hollywood, then you do want to get the book, because this is some stuff that you've never heard. You haven't heard these stories. And these are stories that are right out of my personal experience working in the great city of Hollywood, California, and producing television, producing film, and getting to know some of the big names. Gar Wertheimer, great actor. You've never heard the name? That's too bad, because Gar Wertheimer was one of the finest actors that I've ever seen for about 15 minutes, and then she lost her concentration and usually got on the phone with her girlfriend and was gone by lunch, and we'd never found her. Also, Melanie Riketa. And Melanie, there was a great, great actor too, but he was another one that was unreliable, and he had this boyfriend that wanted to be taken to all the hot spots, and so 2 days in, fired. But both of those performers, emblematic of the kinds of people that you'll meet in the pages of
Frank Gray's I Remember Hollywood.
Pick it up today at Amazon. I don't know if they've got it, but ask them. Maybe they do. Welcome back here to Frank Gray's I Remember Hollywood. I'm Frank Gray. Margaret is here as well.
You should tell people about the time you almost started to produce that crime documentary.
Well, okay. I got involved with a company by the name of Boogie Woogie. Not Boogie Woogie, Boogie Woogie Productions. And Boogie Woogie was a company, it's spelled B-O-O-J-I-E, W-O-O-J-I-E, Boogie Woogie. And it was a company that was owned by a wonderful, wonderful woman, Melanie Robbins. And he was a hell of a woman and had done a lot of producing and a lot, and had been an actress, but quickly realized that as an actress, he had no talent. As beautiful as he was and as well-spoken, that he was better off being a producer. Well, anyway, Melanie Robbins had this Boogie Woogie, and Melanie called me one day, and he said, "Frank, how'd you like to produce a true crime show that I'm thinking of calling Child Actors That Kill?" And I said, "What in the name?" And he says to me, "Listen, I'm a mother, and even I don't trust my son Worthington." And I knew Worthington Robbins, and a fine, fine little actor. She was but she was going to be great. And he says, "I don't trust my own son as far as I can throw him across the street." And that's about how far I trust her, because I could throw her across the street. That's it. I said, "What's going on here, Melody?" And he proceeded to tell me the tale of her of his son, this kid Worthington, laying in wait one night with a sap and tried to roll her own mother. And I said, "Well, how do you," he said, He said, because I was knocked out when I came to, about a minute later, my purse had been ransacked, my wallet was open, and there was $20 missing. I went straight down to the video game emporium. I saw Worthington there. I turned the $20 into quarters, and I sprayed a napkin with ether and put it over her nose and dragged her out of there. And I said, Christ on a crutch, you want me to start talking about that on a show? And he says, on second thought, no, I don't. It just was very cathartic for me to get that story out. And I said, is it true? And he said, how dare you ask me if it's true or not? And I said, I'm very, very sorry, Melody. And he said, no, it's not. And then wheeled about and said, hold all calls, and left and went home. So these are the stories, you see, that inform the life that was mine.
Well, why didn't you turn that into some kind of a TV show? That's bizarre.
Turn what into a TV show? I mean...
Well, the whole story's insane.
Of course the whole story's insane. The entire thing is drop-dead nuts. But turn it into a TV show, I can't even turn my life... I have a hard time with a bowel movement these days. Turn what into a TV show?
Frank, you used to know how to do that work.
Not really. I was a good attorney. I was a good entertainer. Producing television? I was lousy at it. I don't think I had one show that went on the air. And if I did, I'd like you to tell me about it, because I'd like to go and watch it.
What about Fool's Game?
Oh, for Christ.
Fool's Game, you did the pilot and you had two episodes of that.
Fool's Game was a turd of a different odor. That had Chuck Chiglia in it, and she did nothing but give me a hard time. Real big name, big superstar. Thought her stuff didn't smell. And then if it wasn't bad enough with her, then I had the female star, Gloria Boop, with that last name, because he admired Betty Boop and wanted to have... So he's giving me a hard time. So, and both of them were blonde, so...
So, Fool's Game, what about Ladner for the Defense?
That was another log that dropped out of CBS's rectum. Ladner for the Defense.
Frank, you know these people. Be kind.
Yes, I know them. I knew... When Ed Tuleron was the president of entertainment at CBS, I said to her, this Ladner for the Defense, you'll regret for the rest of you. I said, you just had prostate cancer, didn't you? And she said, yeah. I said, you will remember fondly when that catheter was wedged way, way up there as you watch Ladner for the Defense, because Ladner for the Defense will be like having your prostate pulled out through your ass. And she said, what is the story with you, Frank, that everything is so grotesque? And I said, that's how I got to be one of the top entertainment attorneys in all of Hollywood. And with that, she wheeled about and went to the commissary and had chicken soup. And I said, God almighty.
Frank is telling us some stories from, well, all right. So you say you never produced a good TV show. Fool's Game.
Fool's Game dropped out of an ape's ass. That's what Fool's Game was. Next.
Ladner for the Defense.
You already just heard about Ladner for the Defense.
What about Gargantua, a love story?
Holy Jesus.
Frank, it was unique, it was original.
Gargantua, a love story, was about a guy and a girl. The girl is about 6'8", I think, and we got the actress Tony Hedebray, and Tony was beautiful, beautiful girl, and he was 6'8".
Tony was a model, too.
Tony was a model. Tony was one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, 6'8". And the actor was
Blimey Stevens.
Blimey Stevens. She was 5'3". And Gargantua, a love story. So these two actors are working in this half-ass, half-baked series. We didn't even get six episodes out, because what happened was, and it was so funny we kept it in, that when they got married,
it turned out that they went off. They lived happily ever after. But what happened was this: they went off and lived happily ever after. But he had the neck brace on, and the audience assumed that she squeezed his head.
And we didn't disabuse him of that. We just had them go off. We just six episodes. We put her in a neck brace, and he picks her up in a small valise and walks off, swinging his big ass back and forth. It was a horrible show.
I thought it was cute.
It was a horrible, terrible show. And I got a call later on from her, and she said to me, basically, I may be 5'3", But whatever I was able to do between those gigantic thighs, I almost got my neck broken. You got to give me that. And I said, look, just, you know. So,
all right. So, to hear Frank tell it, he never produced one decent thing for television. What about Bunkhouse? It never hit the air.
Bunkhouse, I had high hopes for Bunkhouse. That was the one that Margaret was in. Margaret played the cook, the chef, at a bunkhouse, at a ranch. And the bunkhouse had like 19 guys, and they all came into the cook shack where Margaret's character worked. And every episode we had him in a romance with one of the cowboys. And I think you took on every...
You know, I don't like that took on, Frank.
Well, okay.
And it was romantic. She fell in love with all the cowboys.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever you say. He fell in love with all the cowboys, and he... Every episode, I think you ran through everyone in the bunkhouse.
I ran through them, Frank?
The character ran through every act, every cowboy. So when he was done, just to put it as graphically as, like, when he was done, he had slept with all of them. And he was done, he had sex with the foreman. Her name, it was, well, whoever, it doesn't matter what her name was, who the actress was. But it doesn't matter who the actor was, but her name was, in the show, her name was Butch. And I think that was the first reference we made to...
The first reference made to trim pubic hair.
Right. Because Margaret's character, he says to Butch, he says to her, you got a Butch cut. And she says to him, so do you, pointing below at the... And... That's why I got into trouble with Frank Giffrey over at CBS Standard Practices, because she said, what's with the pointing? And I said, I don't want to just say it. So he was pointing below the waist.
Yeah, I know, Frank. And I'm standing there like an idiot. I'm thinking, does the audience even understand? I said to the character, you got a butch cut. And he says to me, so do you, pointing at my crotch. You're right. It was a lousy moment in what was otherwise a great show.
Yeah, okay. It was a pilot, honey. We never...
It was a great show.
Right, but it was a pilot. We never got it to series, so I don't know what... CBS didn't pick it up, and I was... shortly thereafter, they didn't renew the deal we had, and I didn't care anymore. I said to Twyle Palsy, who was the head of CBS News at the time, she says to me, so how do you like it? And I said, you can take it and park it in any garbage can you choose to... I said, I would rather stare directly into the sun until both eyeballs are burned out of my head than do one more show on this here lot. And with that, I twirled about, got in my... I had an XKE in those days.
Frank had a beautiful XKE Jaguar.
Yeah. And I got in it, and I peeled out, and I got rubber. As the song says, I got rubber in all four gears. And as I left the guard gate, I just gave it another extra. And just walking in at that moment was Gus Hindley, the attorney, the CBS attorney, who had said to me that morning, said, if you think you're getting another deal with this network, I said, another deal with... I wouldn't hire you guys to clean a cat box.
And yet Frank still has good relations with these people today.
I guess. I haven't talked to half of them, and I wouldn't know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's about all I can stand. I can't stomach it any longer. I thank you very much. I've been told to say that there's a pre-show, but it's not on the videotape.
Yeah, there will be a pre-show. It's not on the video.
Right. So with that, I thank you all. And to all, I bid you adieu and hope that you have better days ahead. I'm Frank Gray.
I'm Margaret Gray.
And we thank you all for being a part of I Remember Hollywood here on The Phil Hendry Show, executive produced by Phil Hendry for Siempre Incorporated, All Rights Reserved, Podcast One. To tell you, this is the Flowerheads from a demo 2008, the Flowerheads.